The News from Lake Wobegon podcast is supported by Bisquick. With Bisquick, you can make homemade pancakes and classic breakfasts for your family. Recipes at bisquick.com.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been cold out there, cold, bitterly cold, terribly cold, and it was Groundhog Day here this last week, and our groundhog, George, did not appear. And they kind of opened up part of the burrow, and he was dead. He was dead. He'd become a shadow. And so what that means for us, I don't know, and I don't think we really want to know at all. It's a hard time of the year. Your skin is so dry. Your skin feels like it's made of paper or something, like parchment or something, and your feet hurt because they're all cracked, even though you rub them with lanolin and lotion, and you feel insubstantial. It's just so a dry, crackly feeling, and people are in a cranky mood, and that thin veneer of politeness that our mothers painted on us is now peeling, and people are themselves. Carl Krebsbach, who's one of the most patient people in this town, got in a high dudgeon here the other day. Margie was just talking, going on and on and on about what did he want her to make for Super Bowl Sunday, and did what kind of cheese dip? Did he want the cheddar cheese dip or the sour cream dip, or did he want the beer cheese soup or the what kind of sausage soup or whatever? He said, I just want to watch the dang game. Just a popcorn is good enough. Hot dogs are good enough. He just stalked out of the house. He slammed the door behind him, and he went outside, and he noticed immediately that his snow shovel, which he'd left stuck upright in a snowbank, was gone. It was gone. And he went across over towards the neighbors. He'd suspected them for a long time. They're the Fremsons. And he was just steaming, raging, and if he'd had an AK-47, he would have just riddled the house with bullets and thrown a Molotov cocktail through the window and just watched with delight as it burned down. But as he was walking towards the house, a little light went on, and the word gone came to him. They had left. They were gone. They're from Wisconsin, and they don't want to watch the Super Bowl in Lake Wobegon, surrounded by people who are not Packers fans. So they went off to be with relatives. The Fremsons are not there. And then another light dawned. Garage. Garage. He had put the shovel in the garage. So he went and got the shovel, looked around. Nobody had seen him raging, cursing, across the driveway. He was on the verge of a heinous crime. Small town man goes berserk. Neighbors say he was always so kind and thoughtful. Psychiatrists attribute deed of violence to low humidity. But winter saves us from crime. We're on the verge of it. We rot gut sinners. We're just on the verge of violent crime. But violent crime goes down in the wintertime because of the cold. The cold does restore people to their senses. Arson is up because it creates heat, but crimes of passion, not so much, not so much. You become furious, somebody's tailgating you, and you reach into your glove compartment, you get out your pistol, walk towards his car. He walks towards you. He's got a pistol in his, and you aim at each other, and your hands are shaking. It's hard to get a good aim, and the cold sort of brings you to your senses. I don't carry a gun because I'm on the verge of violence a lot of the time, so I don't really... I don't want to really have that temptation, but I do carry in my car large hardcover books that you could brain somebody with and do some real damage. Somebody cut me off, and I walked over to him. I had a copy of Roget's unabridged thesaurus, and I hit him as hard as I could upside the head, and he became unhinged and wacko, nutso, one oar in the water, two bricks shy of a load, crazy, wacko, berserk. What was I talking about? I went after a guy. This is out on the highway, highway rage, and I went after him with a copy of the autobiography of Mark Twain. It was the only book I had. Not a great book, but, you know, it's good for the purpose. And I walked towards him. He was in his car, and he had a pistol. And we walked towards each other, like high noon. And I was holding Mark Twain's autobiography, and he shot me. And the bullet went into Mark Twain's autobiography up to page 434, where, if you open it and you see the little dent made by the bullet, it landed right on the spot where Mark Twain says, "A man who picks up a cat by the tail gains knowledge he cannot learn in any other way." You always remember a book that saved your life, and as I say, it wasn't a great book, but it was good enough for the purpose. I was up in Lake Wobegon this last week. I was there to visit my mother, who is 96. Most of the time she's 96. Some of the time she's 37, and once in a while she's 11 or 12. Some people call it dementia. I call it living history. She's a storyteller, and there's no reason a storyteller should limit herself to the past tense. So her caretakers find this interesting. Sometimes you come there and you are in the 21st century, and then suddenly you're in 1937, and Franklin D. Roosevelt is president again, and there's a whole new list of characters that you have to keep track of, and it's a challenge to people. It's like being in a play without a script. And then other times she's very young. I like this. I like this. This is the truth behind all stories. All stories take place at all times. You see, we live our lives at all times. We are still children, even as we are adults. And life is many layered and complicated. So you sit with your 96-year-old mother, and she's asking you to forgive her for something. And it's something she did as a young woman. And now you realize that you are her father. And she's asking you to forgive her for something that he probably never would have forgiven her for. But you do, because the thing she's asking forgiveness for is something that led to your existence. It's a complicated thing. So I went down to the Chatterbox Cafe afterward. I was just going to go off, sit in the corner and read my New York Times. But I was walking past the counter, and there was Carl Krebsbach and Clint Bunsen, and there was an empty stool there, two of them. And so, you know, he looked up at me, Carl did, so I felt I had to sit down, and so I did. "Hi, how are you?" "Fine. Kind of cold out, isn't it?" "Yeah, it's cold out." Sat there for a while, searching for conversation, you know. "So, what do you think about what's going on in Egypt here?" I said. "Yeah," they said, "yeah, that's some. Million people out in a square. That would be even better in cold weather. Million people create a lot of heat." Yeah, they say, "Yep. Yes, sir. Uh-huh." "Virgil died this last week," Carl says. "He was in our scout troop, you remember? Yeah, 64. That's kind of young." "He thought so, too." "Oh, he fought it for several years. Cancer took him down. Oh, he really thought he was going to get over it. Full of hope he was. I think hope was probably what killed him, actually. Hope is a very tiring thing." So he seemed kind of relieved to let go. "Yep, Virgil, 64, died this last week." And then I smelled this beautiful perfume, and she sat down in the stool next to me. Pastor Liz was there. She just got back from a 3 weeks vacation out in California, and there was a kind of a warmth about her. She spent most of this 3 weeks in Carmel. Her ex-boyfriend has parents who live there in Carmel. She ditched him long ago, but she held on to them because she always liked them better than she liked him, and they have a wonderful place in Carmel. So she's been living in the lap of luxury these 3 weeks, and she really looked good. She looked terrific. She sat right next to me, her upper arm right against my upper arm. Not used to a pastor doing that. She looked at me and she said, "I hear you've been talking about me." I said, "Well, I kind of invented this town, you know." "Oh, really?" she said. "That's not what I heard. Nobody around here thinks that. Maybe you give yourself a little bit too much credit." I said, "Well, I hadn't said anything about you that I didn't hear from other people." "Well," she said, "it's wrong what you said. You said that I had laid down in bed with a dying man, and that's not true." "Well," I said, "that's how I heard." "Well," she said, "I didn't lie down. He asked me to, but I didn't lie down next to him." I said, "I only said that you laid down with him so you could say a prayer in his ear and you could sing 'Abide with Me, Fast for'." "No," she said, "I didn't do it. It's not true." "Well," I said, "I'm sorry." She said, "You'll be a lot sorrier if you don't watch yourself. I got my eye on you. Other people may be impressed. I'm not so impressed." She said, "I've come to love these people in 6 months here. And that's why my sermons are not as good as they should be. I take a lot of topspin off them because I love these people. I don't want to hurt them. You wouldn't care. I could give you a sermon. It would scorch you for good. And I just might do it," she said. "And you know what I'd talk about? I'd talk about cheap grace. That's your problem, cheap grace. You believe in forgiveness, you don't believe in repentance. Forgive yourself much too easily. So watch it. Watch it, mister." And she reached over and she pinched me. Hard. It was like somebody lit a match and held it to my skin. It hurt. I still have a mark. It's right there. It still hurts. She said, "I think you've said just about enough about Lutherans. Why don't you talk about Hindus?" I said, "I don't know anything about Hindus." She said, "That hasn't stopped you in the past." So she'll be preaching at Virgil's funeral. Funeral was Wednesday. Virgil wanted roast beef and gravy served at his funeral lunch. That was one of his requests. He wanted Baby It's Cold Outside to be played as a prelude, and he wanted the postlude to be Please Don't Talk About Me When I'm Gone. And he wanted the sermon to be about hearts full of love, hearts full of love. So she'll be talking about that. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.